Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu, two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Periskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priest. My name is Father Ted Periskevopoulos. Welcome you back to our 44th episode. This is actually our first episode of our third season, and really excited to have a very special guest, a friend of mine from here in Toronto. His name is Jeffrey Santos. He is the owner, creator, CEO, I don't know what you're going to call him, of Flawless Kimonos, which is a really big brand here in North America, especially here in Canada, for jiu-jitsu gear and clothing and gis. And Jeff, he has been training for quite a few years, about 12 years. He's a purple belt. He used to train at Gracie Humeta, and now he's under Fernando Zulik at Action Reaction here in Toronto, actually out in the East, actually, I think in Durham.
Yeah.
And he's of Roman Catholic background. He is a wonderful guy. He sponsors a lot, and he does a lot of community outreach. And today on this podcast, we wanted to talk a little bit about giving back to the community, which is, of course, something that, at least from an Orthodox Christian point of view, and I would say all Christians, it's an important thing to kind of always remember the community and give back to other people. So we're happy to have you, Jeff. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I think we met about 2 years ago. I was just buying geese from you. So
there you were.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you and your wife, Anne, and, and we just started I started to see you around, of course, in the jiu-jitsu scene, and, we got to talking, and I thought it would be, a wonderful person to have on the podcast. So kind of just to start off, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been training for a while. How did you get into jiu-jitsu? What got you involved?
Well, that's interesting. So I started off at Judoka Martial Arts in judo. I had some knee problems, so I could do physiotherapy. And at the time I had my son, so my wife couldn't pick him up after school. So I would do that because of my shift. And I had nowhere to put him while I was doing physiotherapy. And right next door was Judoka Martial Arts. So I basically walked in, asked the sensei, is it okay if I leave him here on the bench while I do my physio? He said, no problem. I came back after physio. He was gone. I was like, oh my goodness, where is he? He was on the mats.
Nice.
So I was like, okay, this is perfect. I got a place to put my son for a good 6 months. So that's what I did. I signed him up for 6 months. He was there on the mats for 6 months while I was doing physio. After I was cleared with my physio, I was on the sidelines watching him, and I just had interest. Mm-hmm. I got involved and I started learning, judo, which then started introducing jiu-jitsu through Gracie Humeta there as well. Mm-hmm. And then I just asked if I can be a part of the school and volunteer helping with the children. And I just came from there, grew from there. And then I just, I've been volunteering, teaching children for 12 years. I started with judoka and then kind of moved on to Fernando there at North York. And now we have a facility in Pickering, which I volunteer teaching there 3 to 4 days a week.
Nice.
But always starts with the kids, eh? Somehow, some way, the kids pull you in somehow.
Well, that's, so you said you have one son or you have other kids as well?
I have a daughter, yeah. So they both did jiu-jitsu for quite a long time. Antonio's in college now, so he's more focusing on his education, which is key. Sure. I'm not going to take him out of education for jiu-jitsu. Amelia kind of faded away. Mm-hmm. Hopefully she'll get back into it with him, and she's not really working.
Yeah. As girls often do. So I got kids too, exactly, because you outfit my kids. But I got three, and I can totally relate to your story, because it's the same thing. My son kind of pulled me in, right? Because George, so I got twins, right? They're 10 now, but George really wanted to do it, and it was like, it's expensive. This is before I did any training. It's like, Father Thomas, who's not, unfortunately not here with us today, but my co-host, he was into it. He was like, you got to do jiu-jitsu. You got to put your kids in it. So when I put George in it, it didn't even take me 6 months like you. I wasn't doing physio. But as soon as George went into it and I saw it, I'm like, I'm really jealous. I'm going to sign up too. So I signed up like a few weeks later. and we kind of started doing it together. And then eventually the other two children also joined in 6 months later. And now we all train as a family, except for my wife yet. So
far. Yeah, I've tried many, many years, my friend. I got her in a U once. That was just for a photo to say I got her in a U. That was about it. That lasted 5 minutes.
It's tough, yeah. So when you're saying your daughter, it's like my daughter is into it now, and she's really good. Like she's really passionate. But yeah, I was like, statistically, the boys, you know, they're late bloomers. You know, as they get older, they get more into jiu-jitsu, and then girls are the opposite, right? They're really talented at the beginning, and then their priorities change. So I hope that's not the case, but who knows? It's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's a teenager now. She's kind of spreading her wings. And so I'm just, I try not to push them anymore. I did that in the beginning. We trained a lot in the beginning. We did almost 7 days a week, 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
We're eating twice a month. It was amazing. You know what I mean? And I think I fell into that trap of a parent watching their kids glow. You know, like Antonio was undefeated for 4.5 years in judo and jiu-jitsu. Amelia was not as long as him in that sense, but was doing really good. And then, yeah, just kept pushing. And then, you know, they start to not have their childhood life either, right? So.
Sure. Yeah. Finding the balance is difficult. Like my kids, they train 3 times a week. I think it's enough.
More than enough. I think that's like key. You don't want to do any more than that.
Yeah. And they haven't competed yet. Like I'm on the fence on that. Like I'm not against it. Obviously I compete myself, but I don't know. It's like, I think maybe let them mature a little more just to catch up. I never want them to think that I want to push them to it. Like, I need them to do it. I want them to want to do it. Of course I'll support them, but I don't want them to feel that pressure. Like, oh, I have to impress my father or my mother or, you know, I don't want them to feel that pressure. They have to do it for someone else. They should do it for themselves if they want
to. Of course.
Yeah. So we'll see. So yeah. So your son sucked you in and you started there. So was Grace Humeta, was that like in North York? Where was that located?
That was in Whippy. Whippy. So originally it was just a judo school and then kind of connected with, Tony Isaacs and Danny over there at Gracie Mata in Woodbridge. And then I was, you know, once I got involved with that and I was volunteering, I ended up going to their academy in Woodbridge once, twice a week to learn more about jiu-jitsu so I can come back and show jiu-jitsu to the children with Sensei Kevin, right?
Well, you were out in the East. You were living in the East right now, right?
Yeah, still. Okay. I've always been East member.
So you never left, but you were going all the way to Woodbridge. Jeez.
Yeah. Just for the knowledge, right? To give back, right?
Well, I grew up in Ajax. So,
okay.
Right? Yeah. So I grew up right off of Weston Road my whole life. So, and I know what it's like always commuting into the city, into the, you know, my dad and work and even myself, even my church was in Scarborough. So it was always good. In. So I know Whippy, I know Oshawa, I know Bowmanville, I know Durham very well, right? I like it actually. I like Durham very much. Yeah.
I like Durham. I grew up in Midland Lawrence. I was a Scarborough kid for the most of my part of my life, but
Nice. So you did that. So, you know, you got into that. That's how you got into jiu-jitsu. But you don't just do jiu-jitsu. You're also into the industry, right? Of you know, creating and selling jiu-jitsu gis. How did you get into that? Like, was that right from the beginning or did it come later?
No, that came later. Actually, I met Bruno Mandaruka through Fighters Market. I ended up assisting him about 6 years ago at the Europeans in Portugal. And we got talking and then, you know, every year I go and assist him with the booths, what have you. And we discussed and we decided to, let's launch in Canada, right? So we launched in Canada. Became a partner with them, with some, you know, 30% shareholder. Mm-hmm. We tried it. Fortunately, things didn't work out the way we planned, and we had a bit of a falling out, I guess, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. And he moved forward, and I moved forward. We shut down Fighters Market Canada, and I decided, you know what? I really have a passion for this, and our community really doesn't have this here.
Sure.
So I decided, you know what, I'm going to continue, but I'm going to start my own brand, a Canadian brand, and continue what I'm doing, you know.
And that was the best, I think that was the best decision you made. I remember back, we were discussing this when you were going through this, right? It's like, you know, the big gripe of jiu-jitsu players here in Canada is that almost all brands are made abroad, right? So they're out of the States, right? Or mostly in the States, right? But and so for us, like, it's so hard not to have access to local quality jujitsu gear, right?
For sure. It becomes costly, right? So you're looking at, like, you're buying a gi, let's say just your average gi, you're looking at, like, say 150, 160, right?
Yep.
And by the time it gets to Canada with duties and taxes and
shipping
currency, that 150 gi is almost $200-some gi now, right?
You're almost, in some cases, you're almost paying double.
Yeah, which is, it's crazy. So, yeah, so I just, you know what, I decided, I spoke to Ann about it, and we sat down, we thought about it really hard, and, you know, I have a vision for our community in Canada in regards to this, and so we decided, let's just move forward. We know what we're doing, people know us. And
yeah, you have the connections, right? You've been doing it for a long time, right? So, yeah, no, I'm glad, and what it looks like, it's been going well. You know, you've been pushing forward, and, you know.
Yeah, for the most part, the community, you know, they stay with us, they supported us, and they, you know, they told us it wasn't the brand why we were buying, it was more you, right?
Like, people, yeah.
No one was really buying the brand prior to that. Like, if you look at it before we opened up, you really didn't see much of the brand there, right? You really didn't see much of the Kings, what have you. And then, you know, we opened up shop and I pumped it, and look what happened in 3 years. Like, sure. That's all you saw. All you were seeing was the brand, right? So we're doing the same thing again.
Yeah.
Basically, now we're doing with Flawless Kimonos, right? Like, it's the new rise, and, you know, the brand is a phenomenal brand. We have top quality, and I always do my best to, for everybody, like, you know, we take the comments in, good or bad, it doesn't matter to me. I appreciate both of them, and I use that towards the brand, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is what I noticed with you too. Like, it's just like, I have three kids, you know, like, they grow fast, unfortunately. Unfortunately. trying to keep up with geese and, like, you know, they, especially at this age. Right. But yeah, just working with you and Anne, like, you know, always, whether it was before you started Flawless or even after, it's like, you know, fast, like, anything I ever needed. You didn't even know me at the beginning. My wife didn't even know me. And I always said, like, you know, that, and why I was always very supportive, I think, from the beginning. And I always told people, is because I'm like, hey, like, I message these people and, like, literally, you know, not even half a day has gone by and everything's ready. And whatever I need, there's always a response. There's a good customer service, like, all this kind of stuff, which is not like only a plug for your company. It's care for the community, that the people that, you know, and the relationships you make. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the most important thing. And I think that's what people have. Yeah.
I totally believe in that. It's so important, right?
Yeah, of course. And like you said, it's like, people, the brand is you.
Yeah.
It's your personality. It's your, you know, it's your character. That's what people respond to more so than marketing and things like that. Right. So.
For sure. 100%.
Nice. Well, you had mentioned to me a while back as well. So, you know, you've been doing it for a while. You've been doing it for 12 years. You're a purple belt now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you compete as well, because the competitions, you're on the mats and then you're running around trying to do the sponsoring, and you're running around trying to sell the stuff.
doing everything.
Yeah. How did you do at the Open? We just had the Ontario Open about 2 weeks ago.
I did really good. I felt really good. I've been training really hard with a really close dear friend of mine, Pascal.
Uh-huh.
We've been training together since the beginning of this pandemic. We made a pact and we haven't stopped. And as far as the outcome, it was good. Double gold.
Nice. Oh, you did the Open too.
And golden absolute. Yeah. Everything kind of worked to plan in my game. I didn't get a chance to submit anybody there. There was quite a couple times almost had it, but I just couldn't finish it totally, which is fine. But the game was there and I played my game and everything was on cue. So I'm really, really happy with that.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. I was there too. I'm at the end of white, so there was no absolute for me, but I got gold in my division.
Awesome. Congrats.
And it was tough. I have to say, this time it was my second competition, because in December I had my first and I also won gold there, but I was able to, I did submission in December. This one, it was a dog fight.
Yeah. Ontario's a big tournament, right? Like, that's like, this is the largest tournament in Canada altogether, right? And then you're looking at, I always look at the Ontario Open like the IBGF, right? It's like the Ontario Open is almost like the Canada Worlds.
Yeah.
So if you go to IBGF Worlds, the best of the best is going there. So I look at it that same way. So if you're at the Ontario Open, you got to look at it. The best of the best of Canada is coming.
Yep.
You know, you're going to have some stragglers that, you know, want to compete, or it's their first time, second time, and they just want to feel it, what have you. But don't kid yourself. The best of the best of Canada is here at the Ontario Open. That's what you're going up against, right? So it's not an easy tournament.
Well, I feel a little better now.
Well, you know, to accomplish even getting podium is a big accomplishment, the way I look at it, right? If sure. you can even get podium at the Ontario Open, that's a huge accomplishment for you. The fact that you got gold, man, that's a bonus. Like, that's amazing. Well, you know,
I'm also in the old man now.
Yeah, so am I. It's all good. You're
still good, right? Ultra heavy, category, but yeah,
it's not only one of you, right? There's more than one. You're not fighting yourself, right? So
that's true. Yeah. No, it was definitely a good experience, and I want to keep doing it. You know, it's the competition is. I always thought maybe I would never do it because I'm 41 now. You know, like I got into it too late.
Well, yeah.
I started at 38, right? Like, and it was like, it's like I feel old and slow and overweight and so that. So I never thought I'd be doing this. So it's a good thing, and it tests you and it pushes your game. Like you said, like you, when you have something to look forward to, like you're going to compete. Okay, you have a date. So now you're going to push even more. I never understood this. You know, friends of mine at the club would say, oh, you know, one competition is like equivalent of like 3 months of training. I'm like, wow, come on. Like, is that, and now I understand it. It accelerates your game so much.
Oh, 100%.
You're not just, you know, relaxing and going and learning and just kind of enjoying yourself. You're pushing yourself certain parts, specific parts of your game. Right. So yeah.
Even when I get out there, like I'll get on the mats because I compete internationally as well, like through the IBJJF and all that. Mm-hmm. And now every time I'm ready to get on the mats, I always think to myself, like I'm train hard. Like I train hard almost every day with my team and especially Pascal. And I look at when I get out there, I always think they're training harder. Right? I put that in my mind. Like don't go out there thinking it's easy peasy. It's a walk. It's not, right? Like I always put it that as hard as you're training, they're training harder.
Sure.
It keeps me in check. You know what I mean?
There's always someone better.
Yeah, for sure.
Always. Right. So it is what it is. I wanted to touch a little bit about, cause I remember like very early on, especially when you started Flawless and, you know, we were discussing and, you know, you told me that like, right. You would ask me like, oh, you know, are you teaching? I'm like, nah, you know, I'm a white belt still. And I just like, I don't know anything. And you're like, oh, I started teaching when I was a white belt. Like I started helping out right away. And that kind of stayed with me, you know, like that you kind of started volunteering immediately. So I want to hear a little bit about that. Like, you know, how did you kind of like, when you started your jiu-jitsu journey, how early did you start helping out? What did that look like? You know, because that's like part of, you know, you're giving back now because you're going to a club and you're paying, right? You're paying to get knowledge, right? So no one is paying you to sit there and volunteer extra time back to the people you're paying. Right? It has to be within you, right? Like you have to love it.
Absolutely. So yeah, when I started, obviously it was because of Antonio and what have you. And then, you know, I wanted to coach my son. You know, every parent wants to do that. You know, sure. If you don't, you're a liar. You know, forgive me for saying that. But so here I am, Antonio's ready to compete 6 months in, and I'm on the sidelines and I'm trying to coach him on the sidelines. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you doing? How are you going to coach this kid
when you don't do it?
You know nothing about it.
Yeah.
You got to get on the mats and you got to start learning and you got to put in the time. And that's how it became. So I joined myself and I asked if I can, you know, be a volunteer on the sides with the senseis and learn the martial art. And that's what I did. So I started right from the little kids class all the way to the adults every day.
As a white belt, you were doing that?
Every day, just training, learning. And then I just put more time and then I would study. Mm-hmm. And I love it. Like even to this day, a lot of guys are like, dude, how are you still volunteering? Like 12 years later, you're like, you haven't missed a beat. I love it. I love giving back. I love seeing the growth in these children. Like I look today, we have some kids that are where I first started teaching are with us now. And I saw them when they were four.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're teens now. I've seen that growth. I was a part of that growth. Sure, to know that I'm giving back to them. It's man, that's more than money. That's a beautiful gift. Right.
Yeah. And
I was lucky enough that when I started volunteering at Judoka, we had children that were special needs too. And I think that changed me. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get a little emotional, so give me a second. Yeah, that kind of changed me. Mm-hmm. Because not only did it change me in so many different ways, it helped me as a parent, mm-hmm. and being grateful, you know, with my children. But it changed the way I looked at life, you know, and being able to help those children go through what they're going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. So I never stopped because of that. You know, I never stopped volunteering.
Yeah. You know what? Like, well, you're preaching the choir here, man. It's like I'm a priest, right? So, you know, we our survival, basically, at least in the church and in the community, is all volunteerism, right? That's the only way we keep going as well. And so I try to do the same thing. Like, I try to translate my background, which is okay, mm-hmm. I mean, a religious background, into the dojo, right? Because okay, the dojo is not a religious place, but it's a community.
Yeah, for sure.
And we had a podcast, one of the early episodes that we did with Father Thomas and this other priest. I think it was Father Matthew. He was in the States. He was like in Alabama or something. I forget where. And he was doing jiu-jitsu. And we were talking about community, and we were saying, like, you know, how ironically, you know, I shouldn't say this as a priest, but, like, you know, in the churches, a lot of times you have like all this bickering and all this, you know, all this stuff going on. And then you go to like the jiu-jitsu club, right? Where it's like, it's a secular environment, right? It's not, yeah. everyone's welcome. Doesn't matter who you are. Right. And it's like more Christian in the sense that it's more loving and accepting and non-judgmental, right?
Yeah.
Than you have in your own communities. And ironically, it's not religious, right?
It's so true though.
Right. Right. It's a family. And then, so I have found that I'm at Rev MMA, you know it very well, you know, Joel. And I find that it's a good community there. It's a good family community, lots of kids, lots of adults. And so you want to volunteer. Like I help out in the kids' classes too. I don't do every single one like you do. just because of, you know, just scheduling and the kids and just trying to keep up with everything. But I do help as a white, like, you know, I'm a four stripe now. I'm at the end of kind of at the top or whatever you're going to call it, the end of white belt. I've been training for about 2.5 years, and I help out as much as I can. You know, I was going to ask you about this. I'll ask you after, about like your kids and like how did it ever affect them if daddy's in the class, right? Cause I found that sometimes it's like a distraction for my children. So I'm helping out, especially when there's a lot of kids and the junior
program is really
big. But then I found that sometimes I had to pull back because it was becoming a distraction for my little ones.
Yeah.
My youngest is 7 and he's like, "Oh, daddy, hey, you know, come look at me." I'm like, "No, focus on your training. You know, don't ask me to come and give you special attention and things like that." And so I find that, I don't know, some parents, they deal with it better, or some kids don't care. Some kids.
I addressed it right from the get go. Right. So I actually had a talk with Antonio, and then later on I had the same talk with Amalia, and basically it's really simple. At the end of the day, when I'm on the mats with the kids, I always tell them, "I'm not your father."
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I'm not your father, right? I'm on the mats, I'm an instructor, and that's who I am to you. Mm-hmm. I'll always be your father, but when I'm on the mats, I'm not your father. I can't treat you like my son. I have to treat you like a student.
Sure.
So you get no special privileges. Mm-hmm. If you're misbehaving, you're going to get punished accordingly. And then you'll get more punished when you get home because you're a reflection of who I am, right? So it was good in that sense because they never misbehaved. Because they knew whatever was at the mats, the punishment, was going to be far worse at home.
Sure.
Right? So, but yeah, you kind of, it's hard because, that, you know, in the beginning it always is because it's your son. And then, you know, if you see the other ones, like, not beating him up, but you know what I mean? Like overpowering him, mounting him, and you know, the kid's struggling, you can't do anything. It's like, you want to go over there and kind of coach him, but you can't.
You can't.
Again, you're not the father, you're the instructor, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So, and I don't do coaching on the mats. And if I do, I coach both. So if one's in the guard, it's like, okay, you got to get out of the guard. This is what you got to do. And then as they're getting out of the guard, I tell the other one, "Listen, don't let him get out of the guard. You can't let him get out of the guard," right? So it's like a back and forth.
Yeah. You have to be fair.
It's a fine balance, but they need to know, right? They need to understand that you're always going to be their father. You're always going to love them. But when you're on the mats, it's different, right? You're the instructor. Everybody's equal. You can't treat anyone better than the other one. It's the same old story with the stream athlete, right? The guy that's going to the, even if it's a kid's worlds or, you know, adult worlds, they expect that entitlement of more, being treated more or having more. No, man, you're just as equal as the guy next door to you, because the guy that's sitting right beside you is the reason why you're a world champ.
Sure.
It's not you. Yeah, you put in the time, but you alone are never going to do it, right? So they're all together, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's equally the same. Maybe I don't like competing. Maybe the anxiety level really raises for me and I don't want to compete. But I love training and I love being a part of it.
Yeah,
that's good too. You know, I mean, we need those guys, those girls.
It's definitely a paradox, right? When I won this last one, it was like, it's a humbling experience. Like I had posted something on Instagram. I think you had liked it as well, where it's like, you know, it's like the medal or whatever you win, it belongs to the whole community because okay, yes, it's a paradox, right? So like John Danaher says this, right? It's like, you know, jiu-jitsu is both a community, but also the loneliest thing because, you know, the community prepares you, but then when you step on the mats, you're alone. Like it's
exactly.
Just, right? But it's both, right? So yes, you did win. Yes. In the end, it's up to you to like take all that. But if you didn't have your training partners, like you didn't have Pascal, you didn't have your other friends, you didn't have the facilities, you didn't have, you know, your wife supporting you and giving you time, you know what I mean? Like, or anybody else in your life, shifting things to give you time to train, all those things make you, you know, who you are. And if you didn't have all that, well, then you wouldn't have the medal. So,
exactly.
You know, and then so I always try to like say thank you, whatever I do, especially after competitions. Like I make it a point to call or message my training partners.
Yeah.
And tell them thank you.
Like I always do that. I never really post on social media. If you notice, most of my posts, even on my personal Instagram, stuff like that, is flawless. Mm-hmm. But this was a big deal for me only because the amount of effort and time that Pascal put into me and my team, like Fernando and what have you. So I felt like, okay, you know what? I never do this, but let's do it. And I didn't even take pictures of me. It was like the post wasn't pictures of me. I still have my flawless logo and I put the medals with the trophy there.
You know, I sent you the picture.
Me, right? It was about like thanking them. Right.
Yeah.
I did this not because of me. I did this because of us. Right. It wasn't me. It was us. I was able to get on those mats and perform the way I performed because of us, the team, the people that put the effort into me and give me their time. Right. Because remember, time is valuable and time is so short. That's what makes it so valuable. So you need to respect that time. You need to appreciate that time. And you need to be thankful for that time.
Yeah. Because that's the only thing you don't get back, right? Money comes and goes, right?
Yeah.
But the time, it's like I have training partners who come all the way out to the church. I got a little mini dojo, you know, little bunker that I set up here. And they'll come out on a week, like if they have like a shift off or something, they'll come and they'll train with me just so they can help me prepare. And like I value that. You know, it's like you're coming all the way out here, you know, on a work day. Like I got a friend who's a police officer and his shift is starting at 11 a.m. And he's coming all the way to the West End where my church is so he can train with me from 9 to 10, right? Man. So that he can, for himself too, but also for me knowing that my competition's coming and he wants to help me, right? And then the poor guy, he's exhausted and then he's going, he's putting his gear on and he's going protecting the streets, right?
Yeah,
that's overwhelming. And that's emotional too for me because like, you don't need to do that. You're not getting anything out of it. Mm-hmm. Like in the sense that you're not getting it, you know, you're not going on the mats. You're not competing. You're just helping your other friend out. So that's amazing. Yeah. And there's quite a few people who do that, those things for each other. So,
yeah, that's the community, right? That's what it's about. That's why I love our community. That's why I always try to do the best that I can to support our community and help out as best as I can.
Yeah.
You know, see, you can't give the world if you don't own the world, but you can always give a part of it. The part that you own, you can try and do your best to give back.
Well, it's like I just read a quote about that, like yesterday, I think it was, where it's, oh, I was, ironically, it was through a Starbucks drive-thru, you know, sometimes they have quotes on the windows, right?
Yeah.
But it was a good quote. It said, yesterday I was going to jiu-jitsu with my kids. So I went to Starbucks, because I got to get the coffee for the sensei. You know,
yeah, I hear you.
Just
yeah.
You know, you gotta kiss a little butt.
That's no. For the teacher at class, right?
Yeah, of course.
And just coffee first.
I got to get Arthur's refresher because he likes the, right? Yeah. But, they do so much for us too, right? And I saw this quote and it said, you know, like, you may just be one person in the world, but mm-hmm. to one person, you may be the world to them, right?
Yeah.
And it's the truth. So you don't have, like you said, you don't have to have everything and you don't have to, like, be rich and you don't have to have all the resources, whatever, but it doesn't make a difference to that one person. Mm-hmm. It makes all the difference, right?
Exactly.
So who cares? Even one person you help, like you spot. And the last thing I want to kind of, because we've been having a great conversation, and really kind of like the last thing I want to ask you was exactly what you just said. Like, you know, I know you also like sponsor and you try to help as much as you can. Like maybe you want, I know you don't like to toot your own horn, but like maybe you want to talk a little bit about what Flawless does a little bit in the community as far as a company, like as helping out or, you know, sponsoring events and things like that.
Yeah. So athletes, it's always, you know, I try and do the best I can with athletes. Financially, it's not easy, right? Especially now in the beginning stage of Flawless, right? So yep. I can't pay for their trips and stuff like that, but I always make sure they have the necessities to train jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
And, you know, with time, more things will come, right? So with children, it's difficult because realistically, when you're sponsoring a child, if you even want to call it a sponsorship, I'd rather stick more as an ambassador. Mm-hmm. It's more about the child, right? It's not about your brand at this point, because a 10-year-old or 15-year-old is not selling your brand.
No, they're not going out right on the world stage unless they're those rare kids who are fighting, you know, who's number one, you know.
Yeah, like you have right. some out there, but the broader picture,
yes,
it's very few, right? Like you don't have a dozen, two dozen. Like you have like maybe five kids in the world that are doing that.
Yes. Right?
So you can't look at it that way. If you want to invest in the future, which is our children, don't look at the value of that, right? Look at making sure they have what it takes and what they need to become one of the best adults afterwards, right?
Sure.
So we try and help as much as we can with the children with gear, but that's as far as it goes. Now, the adults is different, right? So then you have adults and you have masters. So adults, those are the guys, right? Those are the guys and the girls that are putting everything on the line, traveling all over the place, like all over the world to compete, countless hours of training. You want to try and do the best you can to financially help them if you can. And obviously your gear, right? You don't want your peoples wearing ruggedy gear.
Sure.
I try and get our athletes in new gear all the time. Like I don't like seeing them like a white gi look yellowy bone. Like that just, that's a big no-no for me, right? And then the masters, right? Masters is always tough because it's in that same category now. Now masters, you're looking at like schools, right? Academy owners and stuff like that, right? But they also, those guys have to be out there putting themselves on the line as well, right?
Sure.
So yeah, sponsoring, it's tricky, right? Because then you got to look at followers, right? You can have like the best athlete in the world, but no one knows him because he doesn't put himself out there publicly on social media, right? Then he's only got like 100 followers. Well, what's that going to do for you?
Yeah. And you know what? And that's what people don't realize, that everyone thinks it's either or, like you're either being, you know, generous and helping, right? Or mm-hmm. it's a business. Well, like, no, it's both. Right.
Yeah.
And you can't help, you can't continue to help people. And forget about just not just athletes, but even people who are in need or
there's
a child, like a poor family, things like that. You can't continue to do that if you don't make money.
Exactly.
I remember like the shoes, like Tom's?
Mm-hmm.
Tom's, you know, like, so Tom's is like the big company where it was kind of like the groundbreaking kind of model where, and this has been around now for what, 15 years now, more, right? Mm-hmm. Where the guy, he said, okay, well, I want to kind of give charity, like I want to have a company that does charitable stuff, but not like your average charity where, okay, you go to all your millionaire friends and they give you like $1 million, but they're going to give you like once, that's it, right? The well is dry after that. He wanted to create a perpetual kind of giving, right? So he formed this company where it's like the one for one, right? You buy every shoe you buy, they give a free pair of shoes to a child in the third world, right? Right. So, and what they do is like, it's a perpetual thing. So you're making money and you're also giving, and it continues to go on and on and on and on. So sponsorship is exactly the same way. It's like, you, okay, yes, I'm going to sponsor, but I need to have some kind of return, because if I don't, then I'm going to go bankrupt and I can't sponsor anybody.
Yeah. And then you're just going to go on to the next one because you really don't care. Right. That's a lot of things too, right? Like a lot of these athletes, and don't get me wrong, like I love them. I love our community. I love our athletes. I think Canada has phenomenal athletes. But it's not about just taking. It's both. I give, you give back, right? Like it's a contract, man. If I'm giving you, let's say, $5,000 worth of product a year, the bare minimum, I'm hoping you're going to bring me $5,000 of product a year. At least I balance out zero. There's no loss.
Yes.
Right? Then you, like, if you want a sponsorship and you just want to take and you want to take and you want to take, and then when it's dry and you lose, like you leave, man, that's not cool. That's not cool for the brand. And in fact, it's a reflection on you, and the word will get around, right?
I would take it one step further. Like, at least like as a, okay, I don't have a company like that, but I would say that the person being sponsored, the athlete, I think they have an obligation to like, not just return what they like, as far as value, right?
Yeah.
To return the bare minimum. I think if you care about your community as an athlete, right? And then I would do my best to, and I was in a position, which I'm not because I'm an old man, I don't do anything, right? But if I was, let's say, a big competitor, whatever, and I was in that kind of in that group, I'd be like, well, I would want to give more back to the company that's sponsoring me, to the people who are supporting me. Why? Because they also need to help other people who have nothing. And okay, yeah. This is the priest coming out, right? So I'd say, okay, well, Jeff Santos and Flawless Kimonos are sponsoring me. Well, what can I do to help that company, because they're being so generous to me, that they need to have a return that is greater than what they're giving me, because they're going to have to help children, for example, who don't have any money to buy a gi, or who have poor families. Maybe they want to sponsor a child to be able to train jiu-jitsu when their families cannot afford it. That's a loss to the company in this financially, because sponsor children who are, or anybody, not just children, but mostly children, but individuals who are down on their luck or who are underprivileged, you're not getting that money back. That's benevolence, right? You're giving that money away. So you need to have that money coming from somewhere else. And so my idea would be that, no, it's not just about a symbiotic relation between me selfishly and the company, but it'd be like, okay, well, it's a community. So let's try to help as much as possible, right? At least that's the way I would think of it. But I know you're right.
I do. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, if like I want to make more than what I'm giving to my sponsors, but for me, at the bare minimum, at least make sure that I've covered that cost, right?
Correct.
At least the bare minimum, that you should be obligated to make sure of that, right? And we do get promo stuff with them and stuff like that. But again, we're at the beginning stage, and I'm more lenient that way. But as we grow and going into the new year, there'll be more terms, for better words.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. I want to be around, you know what I mean? I don't want Floss to, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, say, okay, we're done. Thanks, guy, everybody. You know, I made my money. I can retire now. No, I want to be here 20 years from now, and it's not going to be me lugging all those waterfall cages and stuff to the booths. It'll be my son, you know what I mean? And then maybe it's their kids. Like, I want to build something for our community, so we always have this around, right?
Sure, sure. Well, on that note, I think that's a good place to kind of like bring our conversation to an end. I'd like to keep going forever.
I hear you. Next time.
Yeah, I always like talking to you, and we never have enough time because we're always running around.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast and share a little bit of your experience, your knowledge. I think you're doing wonderful things for the community, and I appreciate it personally. I know my kids appreciate it because they love your gear and we love your product. But more importantly, we appreciate the person that you are, you and your wife, and what your family has done for the jiu-jitsu community here in Toronto, but generally speaking, across the board, right?
Yeah,
North America. So, you know, my thanks to you, and I wish you success, future success.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Yeah. And we'll have to get together soon to train as well.
Well, I hope so. Now that everything is open and things are pretty much back to normal. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Thank you, Jeff.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.